Those of us who speak Spanish just know there's some things you can't say in English, right? Especially when you're feeling them, they just come out in Spanish. That's just the way it goes. So I'm going to talk about Hablando Claro. And we're not, it was entitled Straight Talk, straight, like heterosexual straight. So we changed that right away. So we have Hablando Claro, and we think that we're going to call it Talking Truth because there's a youth component to it, but we're not sure yet. But now we've got the Spanish down. We just are left with the English to go. And I'm going to be co-presenting today with Malawi Garcia, who's the assistant director of our Center for Latino Community Health with the National Council of La Raza, and also the project coordinator on this project. And I'd also like to introduce Natalia Gatula. And Natalia is the assistant project coordinator, so we have a really great staff on this project. And also acknowledge Lily Espinosa, who's our evaluator. Gracias. Thank you. Oops. Does this click? So I have no relationships to disclose. This is funded by a five-year grant from the Office on Women's Health. It is, we're in our second year right now of five. So we know that Latinos in the United States are disproportionately affected by HIV, and we also know there's a little bit of undercounting going on, and those of you who know the national statistics know that about 37% of the Latino population, 37 to 38% of the Latino population are left out of our national HIV surveillance data, which is a little startling, right? And we're hoping that we can get some estimates. We're working with NLAN right now to try to get some estimates before the IAC is in Washington, D.C., and everybody, all the rest of the world finds out that we don't have very accurate data on Latinos. We also know that Latino women represent 16% of all new HIV infection. And when we're talking about newer HIV infection, again, we've got to look at those data cautiously because we're missing 37% of the population. And the incidence rates four times that for Latino women, and 22% of AIDS cases among women. So when we look at that lower incidence and then higher AIDS case, we know that probably the incidence is a little bit, is much higher. And adolescent Latinas account for 19% of AIDS cases among teens, 23% among those 20 to 24 years old. So we know also because of the age of the Latino population, this is something that we need to be very concerned about. And in LA County especially, Latinos often, as I know in other central cities, Latinos often learn about their serostatus when given an AIDS diagnosis. 67% of Latinos had less than a year from getting their HIV diagnosis to getting a full-blown AIDS diagnosis. So those early detection failures are very prevalent in our region. 35% had less than 1 month. So, and when we looked at the impact of culture, we have to look at the fact that, of course, we need to peel the onion. And I think it's very interesting because now this new study came out that shows that Latinos live 2.5 years longer. Has everyone seen this study? Than Anglos and 7.7 years longer than African Americans. It's a large study that just came out. And when I'm looking at this, I'm thinking like in spite of all of these things, we have a population that is very resilient. And oftentimes we don't look at that, and we're not looking at these resiliency factors, and I think we should. I think we have a lot to learn. So we need to examine how being a woman, a Latina, a Spanish-speaking immigrant confound risk and also really warrant our attention, immediate attention. Because Latinas often lack the information they need when they discover their HIV risk, and they often discover it when they're pregnant or their partners become ill and they had no clue. We did a large national study, and interviewing women who were now HIV positive, I would say, you know, didn't you have like a little tiny thought that maybe this was happening? And they would say, no. You know, he came home, he was there on Sundays, he provided for the family, he slept with me every night. You know, I had no idea. Sometimes he would come home with matchbooks from from clubs and things, but I just thought he picked them up from work. And I was like, well, how long was he bringing home these? You know, like 5, 6, 7 years. And I'm thinking, wow, right? So these little clues, but not, you know, the basic requisites of being a man were covered. So, you know, that accounted for a good partner. So the cultural norm, also when we look at adolescents, the cultural norms for Latino parents and Latino adolescents are very different because a lot of the parents they develop their sexual norms, beliefs in their countries of origin. They're coming to the United States. Oftentimes the daughters are speaking in English to the mothers who don't speak English that well, and the mothers are speaking back in Spanish, and there's just not an understanding. So the Latino adolescents tell us, you know, I can't even ask my mom about sex or talk about sex because if I do, then she'll think I'm having it, right? And I'm not. I just want to know more, so where can I go? So we're trying to create a culturally relevant environment where we can sanction this type of communication and this type of behavior. And that's very important. So, and we have a saying, we have a dicho, de eso no se habla, right? We don't talk about those things, right? And that's another thing that when we can kind of expose this dicho or the saying and really begin to open up the doors for communication, people are able to communicate a lot more effectively. So we've also seen in studies that definitely parent-child communication, especially mothers and adolescents, definitely reduces risk. And despite that importance, oftentimes we talk about familism, but we don't use it enough. And we talk about the strength of the United Latino family, and we don't utilize it, and we don't even measure it. So even interventions that talk about the strength of familism, you won't find it measured in any indicators, which is something that we need to look at. So I'm going to have Malawi come up right now and talk about the Teen Health Project Adaptation, because this grant was to adapt a Debbie. So Malawi's going to share that with us.
Good morning, everyone. So I'm going to be talking about the intergenerational intervention. So the Office of Women's Health has been putting out these great initiatives. We actually worked on one in 2006. Then it was called Break the Silence. In 2009, it was titled Straight Talk on HIV Prevention. And their goal was to have grantees develop and pilot multi-generational interventions, focusing on a CDC evidence-based HIV prevention program. Also to develop opportunities for participants to get HIV testing. And with the unique focus, they included age, gender, cultural, and language-specific needs into their RFP, which we thought was great because we always incorporate these things, although we're not asked by funders. And also to include the importance of sexual health and risk issues, HIV prevention, and factors that influence multiple contexts, in our case, Latino risk. So we chose the Teen Health Project because it was a community-level intervention that focused on youth and their parents as a secondary focus, and also incorporated family as a focus in the prevention. And like Britt said, we always do everything based on Latino cultural assets like familismo. We know that family unity is important and it prevents a lot of risk. And also the Teen Health Project consisted of a 2-3-hour workshops, which we found in LA County to be effective. Sometimes interventions ask you to do 10 sessions. We know that in rural communities that works, but in LA County we know that we can get them back 2 or 3 times, and that's probably about it. Also, we've seen this effect, like I said, we've seen it effective in other programs that 2 intense interventions work. And also their curriculum focused on many things that we were looking to target, including STI and HIV prevention, sexuality, reproductive health, self-efficacy, and self-esteem. And we found self-esteem to be really important, not only for the youth, but also for the parents participating in the intervention. So the Teen Health Project focused primarily on African Americans, and it was focused in a housing complex, so their context was a little different. Where Hablando Claro focuses again on Latina family pairs in LA County. So we had to make sure to adapt it to be culturally and linguistically relevant. So we conducted literature reviews, you know, of the most updated research. We focused on our findings from other NCLR projects at the center, conducted focus groups with the target populations in LA and Paramount in LA County, and worked with our team of center promotores, community health workers who have helped us develop curriculum in Spanish first, have helped us revise the instruments, and have really showed us what works and what doesn't, even in terms of like graphics and just everything that we include in our curriculum. So that was really effective as well. So like Britt said, we titled our project Hablando Claro, which isn't a direct translation of straight talk, but I think clear talk is kind of what's up right now. And our goal for our project is to reduce the risk of HIV infection among Latina teens, 12 to 18, and their female family elders by creating and strengthening a multi-generational HIV AIDS prevention intervention. And we really, again, like we said, we focus on families. And in this case, in LA County, we have a lot of female immigrants who most likely don't have access to care. And above that, they don't have access to HIV prevention and education. So our objectives were to increase participants' intention to use condoms, delay sexual onset for the teens or reinitiation, and test for HIV. We also sought to increase the risk, HIV risk reduction knowledge, HIV risk reduction behavior practices within the family, so increasing communication within the mothers and daughters and hopefully also their fathers, and also to see if there was self-reported sexual dialogue between the family and also with partners. And also, we sought to increase the numbers of people who were getting HIV testing and counseling if they needed it. So we based Abdul-Nakalato on different theories, social cognitive theory, theory of reason action, community health outreach model, and the Latino health communications model, because we know there's many factors that affect behaviors such as sexuality, communication, cultural, and social economic status. And then our intervention consists of charlas, which are educational sessions. And since we piloted, this is our second year, the first year we piloted a little bit differently where we had 2 4-hour educational sessions. We found out that a lot of our time was being taken up the first session by the introduction and the data collection. So what we've done for the second year is we've split the intervention into 3. So our first session is just the introduction to the project, what the participants will learn, and it's where we conduct the consent process, collect demographic information, as well as pre-charla knowledge and attitude assessments. After that, we schedule participants to come in for 2 4-hour sessions, usually on weekends, because we know that the youth have sports activities, they're in after-school programs, so we want to make sure that they can come back to both sessions. At these 2 sessions, we also include something that is really valuable to participants, mobile HIV testing that's confidential. And we also have an on-site behavioral health therapist, which has been amazing, and she has met with so many of the participants and has been able to refer them to local resources in LA County. After the last session, we have the post-charla survey to assess any knowledge gained and attitudes changed at that time. And after, a really unique thing about our project that participants really like is the monthly support groups. So at first we thought, we know they come back for 2, but are they going to come back for 3 and 4? And we've found that participants really want to be included in some type of social support system. And we schedule them to come back for 4 consecutive months to support groups where we do anything from Jenga, sexual STI activities, to get them really involved. And we get the mothers and daughters to play against each other. So it's really neat because they get really competitive, and also the mothers have expressed that they realize their daughters are learning, but yet they feel like they are not really up to speed, so they know that they have to continue to learn and come back to these sessions. So these have been really effective. I think even after they meet their 4 sessions, they still want to come back. So depending on space, we usually allow them to come back and sometimes have pretty large groups. And also the last thing that we do is we conduct 3-month follow-up surveys, again, to assess the behavior changes. Behavior changes, if they've had any HIV testing, if they've changed their behaviors towards partners, if they're being able to communicate more with their parents. One thing that we have found is that the teens are saying, well, I'm talking to my mom, but how do I talk to my dad? So we're this second year, we're trying to see what we can do to include the fathers into some of this dialogue. And Britt will be going over the curriculum. Thank you.
Okay, I know I have like 3 minutes left, so I just want to focus on some of the activities. One of them is we have La Conquista, and that's like the conquest, I guess. So the mother, we pair the mother with the daughter, and the mother has to try to get her daughter to have sex with her without using condoms, right? And the daughters can't believe that the mothers know what they know and how they can convince them, and they say all the things that the guys are saying now, and it's a great, great activity. And oftentimes the mothers are able to convince the doctors, like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. So what happens is then the mothers know that that's how much they need to reinforce communication with the home, because if it was that easy for them, how easy is it gonna be for somebody else? So. So we know that our measures, we tested our measures, and we know that they're reliable. And I'm going to keep going through. So the support groups, as Malawi said, they've been so important because so many times the social support systems that exist in Latin America are so incredible, and then they come here and we just don't have. We have these very individualistic, structured lives, and oftentimes they just don't add to what they had. So people feel very isolated and alone. We also have a community stakeholder group with 23 different organizations participating, and that has been very helpful too because it really helps us in our community-based participatory research process, and they provide a lot of input, and we're also able to share strategies. And what am I'm down, okay, let me just, so I just wanna say that we've been able to exceed our targets. These have been our actual numbers and what we've targeted, so we've really gone way over. And just to share some results, let me get to where we're, let's see. So in terms of, we know that they're definitely at risk in terms of ever having oral sex, ever having vaginal sex, ever having anal sex. We do have participants who are at risk there. We know that we have made a statistically significant difference in their knowledge, so they're increasing HIV knowledge. We know that stigma around how they feel around folks with HIV and how they're interacting with people that potentially would have HIV and how they perceive HIV risk, we are decreasing, which is really important within Latino culture because we don't say hello, we hug hello, and we kiss hello, right? So if you don't feel like you can hug or kiss someone, that will definitely isolate them. Also, in terms of the certainty of practicing safer sex, we've made a big difference in terms of their ability and their intention to negotiate safer sex with their partners, even with the adults. We've made a significant difference. So next steps, we're just basically going on, and you can contact us with more information, and I'm so sorry we ran out of time. And we have a kit here. So we have a kit, which we use with our promotores, which we're developing. So if anyone wants to take a look, it's right there.
Thank you very much.